Hello and welcome to the Society for Acute Medicine's podcast. Here we discuss topics, cases, and anything new and upcoming in the world of acute medicine. This is our view and take. Remember to always do your own reading around the topics we discuss. Enjoy! Hello and welcome to a bit of a bonus episode for our podcast. With me today, I've got Vicky Price.
Hello, Damien.
And Mike Weeble.
Good evening.
And obviously, I'm Damien Dury. Probably have listened to this before if this is a bit of a bonus one for you all. So I'm going to talk about something that happened today, actually, when I was on my ward round. I was with my trainee advanced clinical practitioner, or ACP, and she had just received a phone call from the radiographers. We had requested a scan for her. I'll not go into the details of the patient. It's not necessary at this stage, but it was a scan that required two doses of contrast to be given to the patient. And the radiographers rang to say that she needed pre-fluids and post-fluids before the scan. And I knew that recently a document had been released that we're going to talk about hopefully soon about contrast and kidney issues. And the patient, I did have a CKD3 and their EGFR was around 46, and it had always been that. And she wasn't unwell in terms of needing IV fluids, or she wasn't septic that needed, we needed to worry about her kidney function too much. So I thought it was interesting that they were asking to hydrate and then rehydrate afterwards. So what have you come across this, Vicky or Mike? Go to Vicky first.
Yeah, all the time. I'm just trying to think if I get it less now or if I just care less. Does that make sense? So I used to panic lots about this, and oh no, can we do the scan? And I don't anymore, and I feel more comfortable. And I'm just trying to work out if I get asked about it less or if it's just that it doesn't register with me as much. Certainly, I know in our trust, you have to put your GMC number into a request that involves contrast if their EGFR is low, and very much you're taking the full responsibility. But again, it bothers me less because I'm now comfortable in my practice. And it's interesting that we're talking about this because I love our podcast so much. I was listening back to some of our initial episodes, and it comes up in one of our very first episodes when we talk about this, about delay in getting investigations. And so yes, I think it's really relevant. It is something that happens. I feel a bit more comfortable now in my clinical practice. What about you, Mike?
Yeah, I think it's still an issue. I can't get a scan approved until they know in GFR from the last 3 months, regardless of situation. So I do find myself continuing to have the ongoing conversation going, actually, this person's sick and I just need the scan. Oh, but we don't even know what their EGFR is. And I'm like, but I don't really care, because actually my patient needs the scan and all the evidence would suggest that I need the scan. So I still kind of have that trouble that my radiology department full stop won't schedule a scan until the GFR is known. And the minute it's low, like you say, there's then the pushback around fluids, or we can't possibly do that scan. The minute the GFR is below 30, it's a whole big conversation. Now, like I say, I feel much more comfortable and in the position of clinical need versus the GFR and all the worries about contrast-induced nephropathy, contrast-induced AKI, whatever we want to call this situation, being less than they used to be. But it is still a big issue for us as acute physicians, I think, that we face regularly.
So I was talking about a document there that has been released fairly recently from the Royal College of Emergency Medicine and the Royal College of Radiologists. And it's basically around the emergency CT scans and the use of IV contrast agents. And they had some recommendations that basically badges together what we've just been talking about the use of IV fluids, when to get scans, etc., and about the renal function. And obviously, Mike, you've mentioned there having a renal function within the last 3 months. And the very first thing that they and recommendation that they mention is that measurements of renal function should not be considered a pre-request prior to scanning for CT scans and radiation. What's your thoughts on that now, Mike?
I think it's good. I think their document's obviously clear about that kind of, that more time critical, that kind of limb or life, I think is what they refer to in their document, but exactly. Those kind of more urgent scans. And I think that it's right. I think, you know, we can all think of cases about people that are really sick in front of us and actually knowing what's wrong with them and making the right decisions for them in the next hour are actually really critical for their mortality risk, let alone their morbidity and recovery. And so that delay to magically get some kind of renal function doesn't change the need for the scan.
And a lot of our scans that we see in the emergency department or in acute medicine, we are requesting them as an urgent. If they don't need it done urgently, a lot of them are planned as outpatients then. But you're right, the document does say that it's a scan that's considered the need for risk to life or limb, or in whom delay in the diagnosis will delay the commencement of immediate definite therapy with potentially adverse consequences. So it's quite clear what scans they're talking about as well. And a lot of those ones is the ones that we deal with at the front door.
Yeah, I think it's quite interesting. They discuss about fluids as well. So, and it's just a really good common sense document. So there's it says there's weak evidence that there's any use of giving fluid therapy. And it's like it says, it's highly likely to be offset by the risk of giving fluids. So giving somebody, an elderly patient with a bit of heart failure, a load of fluid before a scan is probably likely to do more harm than good. And also if you've got somebody who's query aortic dissection or massive PE, you know, waiting for that bag of fluid to go through is really not going to be helpful in the grand scheme of things. So if they need fluid, give it. If they need a scan, do it. And I think this is really useful to supporters. So Damien, you alluded to the fact that, did you use this document? Did you actually talk to radiology about it? Yeah.
It's more that I said that using the document, having seen that I needed this scan done today,
mm-hmm.
and that we could give the patient some fluids and that's fine, but I don't think it should have delayed her scan or ongoing treatment therefore after that. And with the ACP at the time, we brought up the document, we had a read through it. And interestingly, she had mentioned that a day or two ago that she had a discussion with the surgical team as well, who also mentioned this recommendation as well for one of their patients in the ED department as well, that they use this document to basically get the scan done in a timely manner without having to wait for the renal function or fluids to be given. So yes, we did use this, not use it as in a threat way,
yeah.
But more our chemist said this and it's come from the Royal College of Radiologists, so yeah, we don't necessarily need this. And it made me feel a bit better that I kind of knew this, but I've got it in writing now, yeah. And that the recommendation is that we can just go ahead with it.
Yeah, I mean, especially for me, putting in my GMC number every time, I'm just thinking, it's all right. There's a nice document here that's supporting me. And it's so I'm just looking at it now. And the recommendations are that if you need it as an emergency, then you don't necessarily need a renal function. It doesn't matter if they've got prenatal renal disease, diabetes, or on metformin, it shouldn't delay scanning. Age is irrelevant in this. If they need the scan, they need the scan, and you don't have to give them IV fluids before you get the scan. And just setting that out, those four bullet points, is just really helpful.
Yeah, it's always something that I kind of know at the back of my head, but forget about at times. It's the metformin.
Yeah.
So it's nice now that I don't have to remember it all the time, that
yeah.
if it is an outpatient one, yes, hold it off.
Yeah.
But if it's an inpatient emergency one, then we can keep them on the metformin or hold it off afterwards. It doesn't need to help for a few days beforehand. So that's nice.
So Damien, what would you have said if they said, oh yes, but the NICE guidance recommends this, that or the other?
Well, it's a clinical decision though, isn't it? and at the end of the day, it's the patient is your responsibility. So I felt that at the time, as you say, possible older patients with other problems, heart failure, if I had given her fluids, it possibly would have made her a lot worse than improve her renal function, because I don't think giving her fluids beforehand is going to improve any renal function whatsoever in this lady, and with her CKD of an EGFR 45 for a very long time, I don't think giving her fluids beforehand would have benefited her. But I did say that we could give some fluids afterwards, but a slow bag of fluids rather than pushing in lots of fluids to her. So I would have taken the clinical judgment to go ahead with it. But yeah, what were your thoughts on from that point of view?
So I happen to know that NICE are reviewing their latest guidance, and I think we're going to find that they will be coming much more in line with this document as well. And that they're currently there's currently a proposal out to review the NICE guidance. So anybody in a position to do so should have a little look at it and comment on it. But from what I can see, it looks like it's going to be a lot more sensible in terms of this sort of thing about just using your common sense.
Yeah, clinical judgment.
Would you agree, Mike?
Yeah, and I think, you know, knowing that this document came out and kind of exploring us going to have this chat, there's a growing body of evidence from across the world that actually makes that worry about contrast-induced AKI is reducing, or the new contrast agents are much less of an issue than older contrast agents. So the frequency and risk of it is reducing all the time. I think the risk factors are becoming slightly more crystallized in that, yes, diabetes, yes, extreme age, but not particularly, you know, and a few other risk factors are things that should make you think about the need to check renal function. But there's lots of guidelines. I think it's all Canada, US, Sweden have all got kind of quite sensible guidelines, it feels. And I hope NICE will go down that line of kind of the people that truly need renal function, and even in the sort of semi-urgent / slightly less urgent kind of scans, of only if they've got particular risk factors should we be particularly screening those people with a renal function before a scan even. And I think as that evidence grows, as that real life practice grows, hopefully we'll be able to better target the people who are at risk, but not worry so much about the other people. And I think also that when somebody really needs a scan, they really need a scan, and we'll deal with a CKI, KI afterwards, because we need to save that person. Life, limb or other issue is a bigger consideration than magically what their GFR is.
Yeah, and I guess we're doing this as a bonus extra, but Damien and I have done a podcast talking to a renal physician about contrast-induced nephropathy. And I found that really helpful, because it really put it in context for me that, you know, that there are animal studies, there are things that do show that this can have an impact, but it's about using your common sense and thinking about all the ways that you can look after people's renal function. I mean, even by the very nature of somebody coming in hypotensive, tachycardic and unwell with a pneumonia, they're at risk of getting an AKI. So it's worth thinking about things you can do to protect the kidney function from all those different things. So if you haven't listened to that episode already, we would strongly suggest you do so.
I agree with Mike. Like, a lot of the stuff is possibly older archaic things with the older contrasts that are in less use now, with changes, you are seeing a lot less damage to the kidneys. So and hopefully with future developments, things will improve as well.
Yeah, and it's also really difficult, isn't it, to know sort of like if somebody comes in with an ischemic gut and then they have a scan with contrast and then their kidneys go off. Well, you know, is that just part of their ischemic gut and them getting unwell and then deteriorating, or was it the contrast that played a part in that? It's very difficult to unpick these things. And I think when people have reviewed previous evidence, there's been a lot of issue about the quality of that data as well.
Exactly. So yeah, no, it's a good recommendation. It's a good form, and it does help us, I think, a lot at the front door whenever we're making judgment calls and scans for patients, and not having that fear of the kidney injury.
I agree. I think it's going to be extremely helpful, and it's really useful for those two societies to get together to produce something like this, because it just gives weight to the document, doesn't it? It's really helpful.
So yeah, so this is a bit of a bonus one that'll hopefully badge on to the previous podcast that Vicky has mentioned. And then it'll also hopefully, whenever the, as Vicky says, new NICE guidelines come out, it'll be something you could listen to after having read it. Right, we'll leave it there today.
Thanks very much. Bye.
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 Thank you all for listening to another episode of the Society for Acute Medicine podcast. We hope this episode has been interesting and helpful for you all. Please do go to the SAM website at www.acutemedicine.org.uk for all things acute medicine, including show notes from today's episode under the education menu. You will also find more info about acute medicine, the team, and how to contact us individually. Please do get in touch with us via Twitter using @acutemedpod and let us know what you thought, as well as topics you'd love to see us explore in future episodes, or if you'd like to just get involved. Thanks again for listening, and we hope you join us next time.